Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 7th, 2015. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Taxes Take Council Center Stage. From Decatur. The Decatur City Council will vote tonight on increases to the utility and hotel use tax, as well as a 2016 budget that is based in part on those changes. The meeting will also include a public hearing on the proposal to increase property taxes by 14.6%, with a vote on that matter slated for December 21st. City officials say the new revenues are necessary after the council kept property taxes flat and saw that projected increases in sales tax proceeds did not occur for several years. The city has cut 73 positions since 2009 and halted or delayed capital projects and equipment replacement efforts during several years of economic downturn. I think there's far more good stories than bad, but our current financial situation is a bad story, said City Manager Tim Gleason, who assumed the post in March. I would be remiss as city manager if I did not communicate that accurately to the council and to the community. Under the proposals to be considered tonight, the council would increase the utility tax from 1.25% to 4.25%, bringing in an expected $7.3 million. The change would cost residents an extra $3 on a $100 utility bill. Raising the hotel use tax from 6% to 8% would bring in another $241,000, officials said. The property tax levy increase would bring the levy from $11.8 million to $13.5 million. With a projected 1.1% increase in property values, the tax rate would be 1.63 per $100 of equalized assessed valuation. The average owners of a $100,000 home would pay $52 more, a total of $445 for the city's portion of their property tax bill. Gleason described next year's budget as extremely challenging. Increased pension obligations have created strain in recent years, even though police officers and firefighters contribute nearly 10% of their own paychecks, officials said. In addition, Gleason said the city needs to shore up its cash reserves, which have been depleted over years of rising costs and flat revenues. Municipal finance experts recommend having 1 to 2 months of expenses on hand, which Gleason said would be about $10 million. Instead, officials say the city will end the year with less than $1 million, enough money to cover 5 days. One possible culprit has been the expectation that sales tax revenues would increase 2 to 4% over several years when they have generally remained flat. We never hit that mark ever and made a very conscious decision that we are going to have a flat revenue projection because that's where I'm on the most solid ground, Gleason said. Residents could see more tax and fees and fee increases later in 2016. The council tabled consideration of a local motor fuel tax and an increase in fees for video gaming machines at its November 16th meeting. It also rejected steep increases in liquor license fees at the same meeting after intense opposition from business owners. But Gleason said all three measures will likely come back before the council in some form, though he could not say when. At the least, he said liquor license fees, most are $2,000, do not cover the city's cost to issue the licenses. The 2016 budget proposal creates placeholder funds for the local motor fuel tax, as well as the urban revitalization initiatives that Gleason hoped to pay for with the fee increases. The city manager said nothing would be spent in those areas unless the council approves the related revenues. The total budget shows $160 million in expenses, of which the city's general fund accounts for $65.5 million. In the past 5 years, the city has increased fees several times to pay for infrastructure needs. Taking aim at its aging sanitary sewer and storm water systems, the council approved a sanitary sewer fee increase in 2011 and creation of a storm water utility in 2014. After drought took its toll on the community, council members agreed in 2013 to more than double water rates over 3 years to pay for Lake Decatur dredging and other water-related projects. The Decatur Fire Department's move into a new facility last year completed what former city manager Ryan McCrady had once called the city's Big Four infrastructure projects. But Gleason said the city's goals and needs will change constantly. "I think there's always going to be projects that are next," he said. "I think we can put ourselves in a position that we have the revenues to sustain these new projects, these new needs for the city, instead of having to go back to the community and say, I need this new tax. I need this increase in tax." The sidebar to this column indicates that if you go, the Decatur City Council meets at 5:30 p.m. today, December 7th, in Council Chambers, 3rd floor, Decatur Civic Center at 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. Also, from the front page, Young Historian Documents World War II Stories. Article by Huey Freeman, Herald and Review staff writer. From Decatur, "Patrick Sullivan is just 22 years old, but he is already in his second year at the University of Illinois Law School. In his spare time, he has completed a 300-page book about World War II veterans. He was inspired to do the project when he attended a talk by James Bradley, co-author of Flags of Our Fathers, at Millikan University, where Sullivan earned a bachelor's in history degree in 2014. "I heard about his experience interviewing the veterans," said Sullivan, a Harristown resident. "I thought someone should do that for our local veterans. Someone should tell their stories." Sullivan also was influenced by his grandfather, Leonard Kozlowski, who served in the Navy during the war. He died when Sullivan was 7 years old, but he heard stories of his service from his grandmother. "He drove men onto the beach on D-Day. He worked 24 hours that day," Sullivan said. It was stories like this that made Sullivan's 70 interviews with veterans so interesting to him. "Most veterans wanted to tell funny stories," Sullivan said. "They didn't want to talk about the darker stuff. Some of the veterans helped liberate concentration camps." When Sullivan began his literary journey, he turned to the Herald and Review, where he encountered the late Bob Falstrom, a World War II veteran who was familiar with many of the area's former service members. "He gave me a list of about 100 veterans who went on honor flights," Sullivan recalled. "I sent out 100 letters, 10 or 15 at a time." Sullivan speaks with excitement when he tells how he interviewed veterans, including several women, who served at every stage of the war, including some who joined the military before the conflict and others who served at the very end. "I collected 70 stories, but only 50 wanted to be in the book," Sullivan said, adding that some of them did not feel their stories were important enough to be included. When Sullivan began his project, he looked at it as a way to give stories to the veterans' families. He later realized the collection would make a good book. "It was a way for me to give back to the community in a way my skills prepared me to do with my education and interest," he said. His stories range from about 1 page to 20 pages. "It all depends how much the veteran told me," Sullivan said. Robert West, one of the veterans he interviewed, helped liberate the Buchenwald concentration camp. During another operation, West was involved in transporting large ships on land across Germany to use in crossing the Rhine River. However, by the time they got there, a bridge had been secured, so the ships were no longer needed. Sullivan also interviewed a veteran who was involved in the atomic bomb project. Although he decided he did not want his story included in the book, Sullivan said he was glad he had had a chance to interview him and learn that a local man played such a significant role in history. "When you read about World War II, it's about famous generals and great battles," Sullivan said, adding that his book focuses on rank and file soldiers, although he did include some officers. "You learn about marching and basic training, about their times in school, jobs, what happened to them after the service." Sullivan tried to find a publisher but decided to self-publish so he could have full control over the content and finances. "I want all the proceeds to go toward preserving the World War II Memorial downtown," Sullivan said. Those who are interested in contributing to publishing costs may contact Sullivan at 217-963-2656 or donate at www.kickstarter.com by typing his name in the search box. The young man said he always had an interest in the World War II era because it was an attractive, more romantic time period. They call it the greatest generation for a reason. That came out in the stories I collected. And from local news, Firehouse Maintenance Study Set. From Decatur, Allison Petty brings us this article. Years of deferred maintenance to the city's 7 fire stations are coming to a head. On November 16th, the Decatur City Council approved a $51,000 contract with Dewberry Architects, Inc. to assess the needs of the buildings. The firm's work will tell city officials how much repairs will cost and how to prioritize them, with initial estimates between $5 million and $8 million. But firefighters see the problems daily, Fire Chief Jeff Abbott said. Paint peels from the walls in some vehicle bays. The roof in Station 1 leaks in 2 spots. The soffit area in Station 6 gaps so badly that bees and spiders are gaining access. This summer, part of the ceiling collapsed into the dorm room of Station 5 at 225 East Christine Drive. Luckily, the firefighters were in another part of the station at the time. If the guys were sleeping in there, it would have fallen right on them, Abbott said. With a chunk of the ceiling gone, mold was visible. Emergency repairs cost $12,422 in a year when the department's entire building maintenance budget was $50,000. All city departments suffered cuts over the past 6 years, and the fire department was no exception. Many building projects have been put off, even as the department cut 12 positions and runs 1 fewer company. Projects are often tackled piecemeal. For instance, the roof of Station 3 near Fairview Park was reshingled last year, but the department couldn't afford to paint the fascia and soffit until this year. For the taxpayer who says, "Well, at home I do without," trust me, we're doing without, Abbott said. We do what we can afford when we can afford it. One problem is that delaying repairs often makes the issues worse and more expensive to fix. When you're only able to do a very little amount every year, you're just compounding the problems that are going to hit you harder in 5 years, Abbott said. Results of the Dewberry report were expected in the coming months. City Manager Tim Gleason included about $200,000 for repairs in his property tax levy proposal to the council. The council already shot down one idea to have the fire department run an ambulance to provide the money. Gleason offered the proposal as part of his November 2nd priorities presentation, but several council members said they would not support it. After touring the fire stations, Gleason said he had seen how much work the firefighters put into maintaining the stations. They take pride in where they work, and I appreciate that, he said. And an article out of Odell, Julia Elvelsizer, Lee News Service writer, Linking Past, Present. Pontiac students search for Civil War soldiers' families. What started as a science project examining the impact of weathering and acid rain on gravestones has turned into a quest to uncover ancestry. Pontiac Township High School teachers and students are reviving the stories of Civil War soldiers buried at St. Paul Catholic Cemetery in Odell. This project is going in a direction I never imagined, said Paul Ritter, who teaches a dual-credit environmental earth class at the school and Heartland Community College. The group's goal was to identify veterans buried beneath worn, nearly unreadable gravestones and to replace the markers. This year, the students wanted to do more. We're doing research to find surviving family members of the veterans now, said Seth Cunningham, a senior. I think a lot of people would be amazed to find out if they have a relation to these veterans. Cunningham said he's written plenty of research papers in school, but he's never been so interested in a history project. We've all learned about Abraham Lincoln and Ulysses S. Grant, but the real work was done by these no-name soldiers, he said. I'm happy to bring these guys back into local history. The first step of the project was to determine identification from the gravestone. Some of the faded marble markers simply had a last name or military rank. The identification process was not simple. We tried rubs with paper and pencil, but found the best way to make out the letters was to take a picture on our phones and use an app to turn it negative. That changes the light and shadows so we can read more, said Brad Christie, advanced placement U.S. history teacher. The students then examined a roster with all Livingston County veterans through 1920. Soldiers identified so far include Corporal John Schmidt, Captain James Whiteman, and Sergeant Thomas Vincent. Once the soldiers were identified, the lineage research began. We pull newspapers, marriage certificates, and census data. The higher their rank, the more information we usually find, Christie said. We're using Ancestry.com to search for living relatives. With help from Pontiac Granite Monument Company, the group was able to replace two gravestones with new granite markers. A third marker will be upgraded soon. If relatives are located, the group plans to invite them to a memorial service for the identified soldiers at the Odell Cemetery in the spring. The crazy part is, if we hadn't done this, these people would have been lost to time, Ritter said. These soldiers are war heroes, and we owe them our freedom. A photograph accompanies this article. Two men stooping down by a grave marker. Bob Tingis, on the left, former owner of Pontiac Granite, checks the alignment of a new gravestone for a Civil War soldier at St. Paul Catholic Cemetery in Odell, with help from Pontiac Township High School environmental earth teacher Paul Ritter. From Decatur, Huey Freeman, staff writer, brings the article, Domestic Abuse Office Assigns New Prosecutor, and it is subtitled, Shelton Realizes New Job Complex. Less than a year after she was hired as a felony prosecutor, Lindsay Shelton was promoted in early November as director of the Macon County State's Attorney's Domestic Violence and Elderly Crimes Units. Lindsay came very highly recommended from her previous position, said State's Attorney Jay Scott. She has already proved herself to be a very good prosecutor. She will be replacing Mary Cole, who will begin working as a prosecutor in McLean County in January. Shelton, 32, a Rockford native who served 6 years as a prosecutor in Winnebago County, won her first Macon County trial in April, an armed robbery of a gas station in which the robber pointed a handgun at a female employee. He is facing 21 to 45 years in prison, to be determined at a December hearing. Shelton said she likes working domestic violence cases, despite challenges that include victims who frequently change their minds about whether to cooperate with prosecutors. I'm excited about it, Shelton said of her new position. I've been in domestic violence on and off throughout my career, so I'm very familiar with these cases. It is not a position for those who long for popularity. Initially, it's an emergency, and the victim wants the violence to stop, Shelton said. When they calm down, they second-guess what they want to have happen, so that's the struggle. Her satisfaction comes from prosecuting domestic abusers, whom she considers among the most dangerous criminals. They're manipulative, exerting power and control over their victims. It is sometimes difficult to get them to leave their batterers and try to separate their emotions from their safety. Shelton believes she is a good fit because she has always been passionate about domestic violence cases, especially ones involving children. Many of the cases concerning elderly victims also involve family or household members. It's easy to be passionate because these are very vulnerable victims, Shelton said. Those who commit these crimes are intentionally choosing victims who cannot take care of themselves or need assistance. They are preying on the weak. She said some prosecutors dislike domestic violence because of their unique challenges. You have to have a thick skin to do it, she said, adding that in many cases nobody involved is satisfied. It is a good feeling when the victim is happy with the outcome. You do it because it's the right thing to do. It's not just about that one victim, it's the community as a whole. And from Clinton, Kevin Barlow, Lee News Service writer, writes, Grab and go spreads beyond Clinton. Volunteers of the Clinton Church have started preparing for its biggest outreach event of the year to lend a hand to anyone in central Illinois who needs one. Last year, we helped over 900 people, said Cody Monkman, a student minister of the First Christian Church of Clinton. It blows my mind how far people travel to participate. It started out as something for Clinton, but it has really grown stronger each year, and now people from all over the area participate. The 7th annual Grab and Go will begin at 8 a.m. Saturday, December 12th at the church. On Sunday, more than 100 volunteers began the process of organizing used items dropped off at the church. We start transforming our building right after our Sunday services, Monkman said. Beginning at 8 a.m. December 12th, people can arrive at the church at 100 North Jackson Street, register, eat breakfast, and then take any items they may need, such as clothes, toys, furniture, or housewares, all free of charge. Pre-registration is not required. It is an event where we can actually see that people are really being helped, said event chairwoman Marcia Wise. One year, she said, a Bloomington woman who had been homeless had received keys to a new apartment the day before, but she had nothing to put inside. At church, she heard about the grab-and-go event and found a ride to Clinton. She found pieces of furniture to put in her new home, and she was so excited and happy, she said. We see the hand of God at work. Everyone who donates or volunteers are acting as the hands for the people of the community. Monkman says the event often assists kids, too. Our original plan was to help local parents and grandparents in the community find items they were needing, but may not be able to afford, he said. But we always see children doing Christmas shopping and finding items their parents would like or need. Organizers have partnered with the DeWitt County Angel Tree Program that helps provide gifts and clothes for children during the holidays. Ever since high school, I developed a heart for the less fortunate in the world, especially at Christmas, Monkman said. Everyone is high on emotion, and there is so much negativity. But an event like this, where people are making a difference in people's lives, reminds us there is a lot of good in the world, too. Donations can be dropped off at the church from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. any day this week. For more information, call 217-935-3139. And here are the briefs for Monday. From Decatur, burglary discovered. The niece of an elderly woman who resides in a nursing home discovered Saturday that her aunt's house had been burglarized. When she went to check on the house in the 1000 block of North Edwards Street, about 2 p.m. Saturday, she found there were several TV sets missing, as well as a winning lottery ticket and a set of house keys, said Decatur Police Sergeant Chris Copeland. Police believe a possible point of entry was a front window. The crime occurred sometime between November 14th and Saturday. From Decatur, star lighting event. HSHS St. Mary's Christmas star lighting ceremony will be at 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday, December 8th, in the hospital chapel. The Christmas star was a gift by the late Dr. John Rocky White. For the past 17 years, St. Mary's has held a ceremony to light the star as an opportunity for donors to memorialize or honor loved ones. A reception will be held afterward. From Decatur, Olive Street closing. Olive Street will be partially closed between 21st and 22nd Streets from 7 a.m. Tuesday, December 8th to about 5 p.m. Thursday, December 10th for the installation of a sanitary sewer, weather permitting. From Decatur, share your holiday event. If you have a special holiday event planned for the community, the Herald and Review would like to know. Send information on special worship services, bazaars, candlelight services, cantata performances, and other events to Life Editor Gina Matherly, 601 East William Street, Decatur, Illinois, 62523. Fax 217-421-6975 or email jmatherly@herald-review.com. Notices must be submitted by noon Monday, at least a week prior to the scheduled event. We'll publish events online and in our print editions. Finally, from the Briefs section, Decatur, Charlie Brown Christmas. Tabernacle Baptist Church will present a Charlie Brown Christmas at 7 p.m. Friday, December 11th, 2 and 7 p.m. Saturday, 7 p.m. on Friday, December 11th, at 2 and 7 p.m. on Saturday, December 12th, and 7 p.m. on Sunday, December 13th, in the church at 650 North Wickles Road. For more information, call the church at 217-877-5653. And finally, the meetings calendar from our area. From today, Monday, December 7th, Argenta Village Board of Trustees at 6 p.m. at the Village Hall. Blue Mound Village Board, 6 p.m., 317 Railroad Avenue. The Decatur City Council, 5:30 p.m. in the Council Chambers, 3rd floor, Decatur Civic Center. Forsyth Village Board of Trustees, 6:30 p.m. in the Village Hall. Hickory Point Town Board of Trustees, 7:30 p.m. in the Town Hall. Illini Park District Board of Trustees, 6 p.m., 265 South Main Street in Warrensburg. Latham Fire Protection District Board of Trustees, 7 p.m. in the Firehouse. Mount Zion Village Board of Trustees, 5:15 p.m., Village Hall. Warrensburg Village Board of Trustees, 7 p.m. at 155 East Main Street. Warrensburg Fire Protection District Board of Trustees at 7 p.m. in the Firehouse. Tuesday, December 8th, Austin Township Board of Trustees, 7:30 p.m. in the Town Hall. Harristown Fire Protection District Board of Trustees, 5:30 p.m., 4417 West Main Street. Mount Zion Planning and Zoning Commission at 5:30 p.m., Village Hall. Wednesday, December 9th, Decatur Public Library Board of Trustees Finance and Properties Committee, 4:30 p.m. in the Public Library. Forsyth Library Commission, 1 p.m. in the Public Library in Forsyth. Thursday, the Decatur Housing Authority at 3:30 p.m. in the Don F. Davis Administration Center, 1808 East Locust Street. Decatur Zoning Board of Appeals at 4 p.m., Council Chambers, 3rd floor, Decatur Civic Center. And the Macon County Board at 5:30 p.m., caucuses at 6 p.m., 5:30 p.m. caucuses, 6 o'clock p.m. full board, room 514, Macon County Office Building, at 141 South Main in Decatur. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Decatur Herald and Review, December 7th, 2015. Please stay tuned.